There have already been a few talks on the subject, so let me give only a brief motivation and introduction. First, some facts. So the subject of tachyon condensation has been studied using various means: open string field theory, boundary string field theory or background independent string field theory, dual gauge theory, which was used in the very first paper of Sen in discussing tachyon condensation and annihilation of the D2 D2 bar system, first quantized approach, which used marginal deformations of conformal field theory, and non-commutative gauge theory. So fact number two, so one, okay, object would be to try to compare the results of these various different approaches. And as has been pointed out in various talks by now, that there are some very interesting questions about the vacuum that one gets after tachyon condensations and the status of the open string variables in that vacuum and so on. So the more we have handled on the subject by various approaches, it would be better. And in particular, a gauge theory formulation, okay, would presumably be able to handle some of the questions better. I'll go into the details of these things more later on. Okay, so fact number two is that matrix model is naturally connected to non-commutative gauge theory, something which also I will go into more detail later on. This has been shown recently. And furthermore, matrix model has a very simple Hamiltonian and a supersymmetric ground state. Okay, by matrix model here, I will be talking mostly in this talk about the BFSS matrix model. And then one of the main systems which are described in these contexts, besides unstable D brains, are brain anti-brain systems, which are simply described in matrix theory. So a natural question that comes is, what is the description of tachyon condensation in matrix theory? By that, I mean the BFSS matrix model. Okay, then another issue is that matrix model, which was proposed as the non-perturbative definition of M theory, it can describe various objects like brains, fundamental strings, matrix strings in particular, as was shown by Digraph, Verlinde, and Verlinde, etc. And so can open string field theory, which also seems to have this unifying feature of describing various solitonic objects and the closed string vacuum and the closed string excitation, etc. Now, as I said, one very interesting question would be to ask, how do the constructions compare? Okay, so in particular, that also involves comparison between non-zero BNS field and zero BNS field, and also a comparison between sectors of a theory with given D0 charge with another sector which has zero D0 charge. And I mean, one of the two, okay, so a simple example of these questions is, how do the vacua and the Hamiltonians compare? So these are some things which I will go into some detail in my talk. Another technical question is that in the discussion of non-commutative gauge theory for non-BPS brains, okay, there is a matrix model-like construction, but that is not quite derived from matrix model, and it uses a somewhat unnatural variable from the point of view of matrix model. a variable t which is taken to be the tachyon, so which does not appear in the initial BFSS Hamiltonian. So we would like to address how this sort of variable t and the kind of effective actions that are proposed in that context, whether we can understand them starting from the BFSS model. Okay, so part of the talk will be a bit technical. So let me give you a plan, which is also a summary of the talk. So we would construct first the non-commutative gauge theory for DD bar systems using matrix model, okay, detailing the connection between the non-commutative gauge theory and the matrix model in this particular context. Then we would discuss in some detail the issue of gauge fixing, because the starting number of degrees of freedom, of course, will be more than what we expect from string theory. So we would discuss the issue of gauge fixing and find the real content of physical variables which will match the string theory content. Then we will, okay, so for a specific choice of gauge, we will be able to solve the gauge fixing condition exactly, enabling us to write the exact tachyon potential. Then we would talk about local minimum of this tachyon potential, which corresponds to vortex solutions, and the global minimum, which corresponds to the exact ground state. And we'll discuss a path connecting the top of the tachyon potential to the bottom of the tachyon potential would be some sequence of release of more and more vortices. It's a picture of gradual annihilation of the D2 and D2 bar brains. And we would also discuss briefly closed string excitations in this tachyonic vacuum of two kinds. One is an adaptation of the construction of matrix strings a la DVV in our context, and another is flux tube construction, which has already appeared in the context of unstable brains in the work of Harvey, Krauss, Larsen, and Martinek. So I would only mention some papers which are of direct relevance to the subject here. This paper, Awata et al., and the Aharoni, Berkus, and Lifshitz Mathur papers dealt exclusively with the matrix model framework, and the paper by Krauss, Rajaraman, and Schenker and Lee are in the matrix model non-commutative gauge theory framework. All right. So I said that there is a simple description of brain anti-brain systems in matrix model. So for simplicity, we would focus on the D2 D2 bar system. And so I would now discuss how they are described in the matrix model. So let us discuss, recall briefly the BFSS matrix model in the A0 equal to 0 gauge. This is the Hamiltonian. Okay, it's basically, it has a commutator square term as a potential, and because of the A0 equal to 0 gauge, you have the Gauss law. Okay, a single D2 brain is described by simply taking this classical solution, which is capital X1 equal to small x1, and this object where small x1 and small x2 are fixed operators, okay, which satisfy the Heisenberg commutation relation, and we take the transverse x's to be all zero. So this describes as D2 brain extending in the 1-2 plane. Okay. So how does one describe two coincident D2 brains? So that is easy. So you take block diagonal constructions like this, in which you have x1, x1 and x2, x2 over there. So a coincident d2, d2 bar brain is obtained by simply flipping the sign of this x2 to minus x2. Okay. And so it's easy to check that this is a classical solution, satisfies the equation of motion and Gauss law, etc. Now let me briefly review the connection between non-commutative gauge theory and matrix theory. So let us go back to the case of two coincident d2 and parameterize the fluctuations in the longitudinal coordinates as this, okay, where theta AB is theta times epsilon AB, okay, where theta is the same, okay, this is what theta AB is, okay, it's the same theta that appeared in the Heisenberg algebra commutation relation. Then, and we would also parameterize, okay, this is just a relabeling. So then the Hamiltonian of original BFSS theory simply splits, okay, it's just like a non-commutative gauge theory in 2+1 dimensions, and specifically this is it. I'm not writing here the Hamiltonian which depends on the phi part, we will come back to that later on. So, and the Gauss law looks like this, okay, this is just for completeness. Now, in terms of such a description, it is interesting to observe that the d2, d2 bar system, the brain anti-brain system, can be simply thought of as a flux in this non-commutative gauge theory, because recall that the effect of flipping the sign of this x2 can equivalently be represented as introducing a certain amount of A1 gauge potential, okay, which is given by this. So you can easily calculate the field strength corresponding to that, and that corresponds to therefore a certain web of this field strength or certain flux. And you can check again that it is the classical solution of the U2 non-commutative gauge theory, which satisfies the equation of motion and Gauss law. So for now, we will work in the Higgs branch, in which we'll put the phi i's to be equal to 0. Remember, those were the transverse fluctuations of the brain anti-brain system corresponding to coincident brain anti-brain systems without system without transverse fluctuation. So we will now parameterize this U2 gauge field as follows. Remember, this is a 2x2 Hermitian matrix. Okay, so in terms of non-commutative gauge theory, in the operator formulation, these are all Hermitian operators. This is a complex operator. This is its dagger. And explicitly, the field strength is another U2 matrix of operators, okay, which is given by that. Okay, so the original d2, d2 background, of course, is given by all these objects equal to 0. And the d2, d2 bar background, as I mentioned, is sitting here for a equals 1. So that is this. Okay, just to orient ourselves, I will leave the, plan of the talk here. So I have described part 2, which is the discussion of DD bar systems using matrix model. So now let us discuss the degrees of freedom. Okay. So we have two 2x2 matrices, Hermitian matrices. So the degrees of freedom that we have are 8. On the other hand, from string theory, what we know is that there are, of course, two U1 gauge bosons corresponding to the open strings that begin and end on the same brain. And so those are two E1 gauge bosons corresponding to 2 degrees of freedom. Remember, this is 2 plus 1 dimensions. And one complex tachyon corresponding to these off-diagonal fluctuations. So that's 4. But of course, we have 8 degrees of freedom. Clearly, it's a gauge theory, and we have to fix gauge to achieve that. Now, let me remark here that the isolation of redundant degrees of freedom is rather natural in the non-commutative gauge theory formulation as compared to the original matrix model formulation. In the matrix model studies, for example, of Aharoni and Berkus, such a separation is possible only in the zero mode of the fields. Only in the zero mode sector, the tachyon could be isolated. And in fact, even there, if you look at the spectrum of fluctuations, there were 0 eigenvalues which were simply declared as pure gauge degrees of freedom. And there was not much understanding why these were pure gauge. But these sort of issues are rather naturally resolved in the non-commutative gauge theory formulation of the matrix model, as we will see. And as has been emphasized in several talks on open string field theory, the gauge fixing issues are rather important even in open string field theory. So I'm just trying to say that it seems that the more we reformulate some of the issues in gauge theory language, it's probably going to be profitable. Okay, so so let us first fix a unitary gauge. Okay. Remember, the field strength was a 2x2 Hermitian matrix. So we can make this U2 cross U infinity, that is to say U2 is a matrix of which each element is an operator. That sort of gauge rotation on the field strength to make this diagonal. And so our gauge fixing condition is that F12 is diagonal, and the off-diagonal terms where these, okay, involving the covariant derivative of the off-diagonal T fields. And so therefore, the unitary gauge condition says simply this. Okay. So formally, this already tells us that T2, okay, can be thought of as a dependent variable, and T1 is the independent variable, like that. But of course, this is too formal, and one cannot really solve this. So at this stage, after fixing the unitary gauge, we have a U1 cross E1 gauge symmetry, because it's a diagonal matrix now. And the residual gauge symmetries acting on the gauge fields and the tachyon fields are that. Now we can gauge fix further to fix even the residual E1 cross E1 gauge symmetry. For instance, we can choose the axial gauge, okay, of a kind. So which will be, we will take A1 equal to 0 and A1 tilde equal to 2x2 over theta. I will explain the reason behind this particular choice very soon, our motivation for choosing that. So now remember that I have not quite focused only on a particular background, D2, D2 bar background, but I am discussing the entire U2 gauge theory. Okay, discussing gauge fixing in that. So for example, D2, D2 background as well as D2, D2 bar background can be of course cast in this gauge, and the brain background is in this gauge slightly more non-trivial. So A1 of course is fixed to be that value fixed by the gauge fixing condition. So you have to give a VEV to A2 in this gauge to discuss the brain background. That's minus 2x1 over theta. These are easy things to check. This is a specific gauge transformation that you have to do using the residual E1 cross E1. And D2, D2 bar, of course, is given by all VEVs equal to 0. Now, at this stage, we have independent variables, which are A2, A2 tilde, and T1. That's, of course, 4 degrees of freedom, which we were looking for. Now, I will show that in this particular gauge choice, we can actually solve for T2 completely in terms of T1. Okay. So for that, it is however possible to do when we go back to the Moyle product notation. These have been explained in the talks by Gopakumar and Meenwala, and probably other people also here, so I'm not going to repeat that. So basically the covariant derivative, okay, is given by this line over here, okay, so the gauge field A1 multiplies from the left and A1 tilde multiplies from the right. And nicely enough, if you go through the definition of the star product here, then the covariant derivative acting on T2 simply becomes a multiplication by this number T2, X2 here. Basically, what happens is that this star product over here gives rise to a minus del 1 T2, which cancels that. Okay, so now clearly you can solve this equation explicitly for T2 in terms of T1, okay, using this last formula, this page. And that solution is the following. So that solution is this. Okay, so this is the explicit solution for T2 in terms of T1. So now I will call T1 as T. So, indicating for me that the tachyon variable will be this. Of course, there are always possibilities of field redefinitions, like some combination of T1 and T2 could also be the real tachyon variable, etc. But so this is what it is, and the field strength is given by this sort of a matrix, in which we will think of the T2, okay, to be given by that expression. Okay, so now it's easy to go back to the BFSS Hamiltonian and simply write down the Lagrangian, which will now have only these independent variables. So this is a complicated expression, but all I want to mention to you is that it involves only T and A2 and A2 tilde, which are the independent variables. Furthermore, A2 and A2 tilde appears only quadratically in this one. So in principle, one can integrate out A2 and A2 tilde, and then the whole thing is a function only of T. So that's actually the static Hamiltonian. So this is an exact tachyon potential. In the next few pages, I will describe some properties and then explicitly evaluate it for some configurations like the vortex configurations and discuss the vacuum configuration in terms of these, and then the properties will be clearer than this rather complicated looking expression here. Okay, so first of all, so for a moment, let me keep that potential over there. So one can clearly see the top and the bottom of the tachyon potential from there. Okay, so see that this expressions small h1 and small h2, they have these constant pieces, 1 upon theta and 1 upon theta over there. So as I said, the d2 bar background itself is that all this a2 t and a2 tilde, etc., they are all 0. So you can compute for that configuration what the value of the static Hamiltonian is, and that correctly turns out to be twice the mass of a D2 brain, as you expect, at the top of the tachyon potential. How about the bottom? Okay. So as we will see later on, that of course the minimum of such a Hamiltonian, since it is a sum of squares, Okay, is h1 equal to small h1 equal to 0 and small h2 equal to 0? And indeed, we will find that there are such configurations. So that will say that the bottom of the tachyon potential is 0. So furthermore, you can see from there that there is a global U1 symmetry as one expects out of the for the complex tachyon potential in this Hamiltonian. Okay, under this global U1 rotation, the Hamiltonian remains invariant, and therefore we get a very qualitative picture at the moment, which is like from 2m d2 it goes down to zero value of the Hamiltonian, and it's like roughly in a qualitatively a Mexican hat potential because of the U1 rotation. Oops. Okay, and the fact that the Hamiltonian equal to zero can be achieved is clear from the original matrix model formulation, where one can just see that if you take x1 comma x2 equal to zero for static configurations, that of course is a supersymmetric ground state given by Hamiltonian equal to zero. So, and that is also given by n static d0 brains. Okay, so I have to hurry up a bit. Okay, so now one can, I will discuss the vortex solution. So we will evaluate this these configurations, okay, in for the simple configurations like T, which is proportional to the projection operator like this, which is given in the functional formulation like exponential, this Gaussian. And so the Hamiltonian can be explicitly evaluated, that one. And so this is for a particular class of configurations, and you can minimize in that class, okay, for this. So this is a little configuration space which is giving you something like a, you know, one mode of the tachyon, which already gives you the right mass, okay, and you can minimize in that particular class. This is the particular value of the minimum. And what happens is that this Hamiltonian if you regulate the original representation of the Heisenberg algebra as n dimensional, then it this minimization exactly takes away one unit of out of that n, and you have n minus 1. Okay, so that is what happens, that the energy n goes down in steps of 1 like that. So let me just say that okay, so this is a vortex solution. It's a localized codimension 2, and it's identified clearly with a d0 brain solution. So I have probably not emphasize that. So the commutator x1, x2 looks like this. Okay, so this is like a pair of d0 brains has been released. Okay, so one sees that this vortex solution corresponds to d0 brains. That clearly checks out with the Ramon charge and the okay, thanks. Okay, so this process in fact can be continued by taking higher and higher rank operators here, and you can explicitly find, you can find a recursion relation between the coefficients T, which parameterize this configuration space, and you can explicitly solve this system, and you can find that at every step the Hamiltonian actually is losing some integer units of energy. And so if you continue that, you will find that you go to the static Hamiltonian equal to zero. Okay, so this you know, we can I don't have the time to discuss this. It seems here that we are using a finite dimensional representation of the truncation of the Heisenberg algebra, but this is not necessary in order to exhibit the explicit vacuum solution. Okay, now I will discuss in the last 2 minutes the closed string excitations in this vacuum. Okay, so let me just mention the result first. If we compactify the matrix model or the U2 non-commutative gauge theory on a circle along x9 of radius r9, we find two types of closed string excitations in the tachyonic vacuum. One is closed strings of mass 1 upon square root of gs. That's the important part here. This is, in fact, the same dependence on the coupling constant as the DVV matrix strings. I will explain if I have time in more detail, of course. And flux strings, which have the usual, which are light in the existing range of coupling constant. These are also light in some dual range of coupling constants, which I will come to now. So, so let me give you some details. So basically, you do the compactification of the BFSS Hamiltonian a la Taylor's prescriptions, for example, and this is what you get. The tachyonic vacuum, which we have just found, it looks like that the two transverse fields, functions of sigma, these are simply constant eigenvalues, these are diagonal matrices lambda 1 and lambda 2. And I will just mention that there are two kinds of terms here, which is something like a kinetic, something looking like an L naught of a string theory, okay, which has L naught over LS here, where LS is square root of alpha prime. And there is another piece which has this electric field and the commutator square term, which has LS over R9 in it, actually GS LS over R9 in it. So we can consider two regions so far as the choice of R9 is concerned. So if R9 is here, okay, this was the region which was considered by Digraph, Verlinde and Verlinde, which in a certain dual formulation actually gave us fundamental strings. Okay, so okay, without going into details, I can just say that that discussion can be applied to our context directly, and the mass will turn out to be 1 upon square root of GS because of the chain of dualities. There is a TST chain of dualities, or R9, R10 flip that is involved here. Am I okay? I think last transparency. And the chain of dualities is okay to use because these are BPS states. So basically, the picture as GS increases is that you find the existence of this light strings here, but you can continue on up here because the tachyonic vacuum is a supersymmetric ground state and these are BPS states, so you can do that. And then there is a flux tube solution, which is pretty much like what was found for non-BPS brains. There is some subtlety about charge quantization there, which I can discuss in private with anybody. So this is the last transparency. So the open questions, one of them I have already mentioned in the introduction, is that the matrix model forces us to be in a sector where the number of D0 brains is non-zero and it is n. And can one reproduce the commutative results of open string field theory or BSFT from there? And we have this exact tachyon potential, and there are calculations of tachyon potentials in the boundary string field theory. Can we compare them? And can we get, for example, unstable D brains, okay, from our construction? And whether we can, these things that were mentioned, for example, in Sen and Zwieback's talk about the open string degrees of freedom being something like pure gauge degrees of freedom, okay, can we see that in the kind of gauge theory that we have? Thank you.
Questions? If there are no questions, let's thank the speaker. Before we go to the next talk, I request everybody in the audience to come over here. There are a lot of space.